Hello everyone, this is Dark Journalist with part two of Aftermath, Secret Systems, a special interview with Dr. Joseph Farrell.
Well, let's take two examples. They're both kind of West. California is the big leftist push to break away California and make it its own country and break it off from the United States. And it can have all these leftist policies. They've driven so many people out of there with the insane leftist policies and the lockdowns and all the rest, being one of the most severe lockdown states next to New York. Idaho, on the other end of the spectrum, they have agreements with people who live in Oregon to merge. And they're looking into that. That's their corridor there, because in Portland, which seems to dominate, even though, you know, that is the major city in Oregon, although Oregon's a gigantic state, outside, if you get outside of Portland, it's very conservative. But right there, Portland is, again, one of these ultra-leftist regimes running that city. And we know it's the home of Antifa and all the rest. So when we're looking at that, they've got their two sides working to break things up.
Yes. It's interesting to me that within California, as you say, you've got pushes from the left for a secession of the entire state. But within the state, you also have movements on the right of people that want to break the state up and create, you know, a state out of the more conservative parts of California.
Right.
And the other interesting thing is you have that same similar movement going on in Oregon, as you pointed out, where they want to break the state, parts of the state off, and either become a new state or merge with Idaho and so on and so forth. Now, interestingly enough, the precedent, of course, was set in the Civil War when West Virginia broke from Virginia and joined the Union.
Right.
Okay. So that precedent has been established. What I think is going on with this Democratic push for statehood for Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico is a response to that. Because what they're trying to do, you know, if California breaks up, then you get two more senators in the Senate who are probably going to be Republican from the parts of that state that are very conservative. And if Oregon splits up or joins Idaho, Idaho's congressional delegation increases. Or if it becomes another state, you get two more conservative senators. So this is a way of heading this off at the pass. If they go through and are successful in some of these movements. And then, of course, you add Texas to the mix, which I don't think, you know, the way things are going in this country, I don't think you'll see Texas going along with a lot of it.
Well, we could almost look at them as free states versus the Democratic lockdown states. And it's interesting, we are seeing now that they've got Trump out of office, suddenly they're saying, hey, we can go back to restaurants again, no problem.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't it nice? Governor Gruesome just lifted all of those lockdown restrictions. We've got the COVID licked now.
Yeah. Gretchen Whitmer's like, hey, it's just a party.
Let's go for it.
Amazing. Joseph, this is fascinating. One of the things that is trending around all this is that before Trump got out, he was able to appoint a third Supreme Court justice, Amy Coney Barrett. And she, with her conservative credentials, would probably cancel out Roberts, who is collapsing at every turn and turning liberal, which is very unusual. And that his behavior is very bizarre, actually, in so many cases over the last year and a half, actually going all the way back to Obamacare, really, but at least in the last couple of years, and he being the Chief Justice. The Supreme Court, the way that it's set up, is conservative dominated. How is this Biden Senate legislative congressional Democratic push for a domestic terror bill ever going to get past those hardcore conservatives in the Supreme Court?
Oh, I think it's very easy. First of all, let me go on record as saying I was dubious about Amy Coney Barrett when I read one of her opinions.
Uh-huh.
And I remain dubious about her. But that said, I predicted when when Texas started its lawsuit against Pennsylvania, I predicted that the Supreme Court wouldn't hear it because they would claim Texas lacked standing before the court, okay. Which is exactly what they did.
Yes.
Okay.
It actually unraveled all of the Trump opposition to the election, actually.
Right, exactly. I think that the Supreme Court, other than perhaps Justices Thomas and Alito, who, you know, showed their true colors during the election thing by saying, yeah, we need to hear this.
Yes.
And they did need to hear it, quite frankly. But I think what you're going to see is the court will dodge anything of a constitutional nature that the Democrats may do by claiming, if any suit is brought about the constitutionality of it, by simply claiming you have no standing. This is the classic lawyer's dodge. This is the classical judicial dodge that we don't want to hear anything. You know, they'll come up with something that they don't want to hear. Just like Roberts has bowed out of this ridiculous, you know, post office impeachment trial now that the Senate wants to have. Well, he's claiming, well, impeachment is a political act.
Yes.
So he doesn't want to be involved. I'm sorry. No. The Constitution says you're the one that presides over those trials.
Yes.
So, you know.
The fact that he isn't basically delegitimizes the whole thing.
Yeah, right.
It's already delegitimized because it was such a stupid thing to do to bring a second one.
Right.
And the charges, don't have any merit. But it's unusual. They wanted anything. They wanted that leverage to get Trump out. But they didn't trust him. They were worried about something.
What they're worried about is the fact that they've lost the people.
Yes.
There's no other explanation for what we saw in this recent sham of an inauguration. There's no other explanation for it other than they know they've lost the people and they're just going to go for broke anyway.
Wow.
And, they'll stage something to do a gun grab, you know,
Right.
I put nothing past these people at this point. I really put nothing past these people at this point. There's no control over them. It's like a friend of mine said, Daniel, how much progressivism is enough? What's the goal? What's the goal? When do we arrive?
Right.
And they can't say that because it's the process itself that empowers them.
Exactly.
And, you know, in a bad way, that whole process is enshrined right in the preamble to the Constitution in order to form a more perfect union. Well, what's the definition of perfection here? And when do we arrive at it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. It's been squatting right there since Philadelphia, 1787.
Yes. Yes.
It's interesting. I was just reading one of the Anti-Federalist papers last night.
Oh, wow.
and you know me, I keep telling people I'm an Anti-Federalist. Go read the Anti-Federalist papers too. You know, not just the Federalist papers.
Right.
One of the papers I was reading last night, I forget which number it was, had a very, very prescient observation against the House of Representatives by noting, okay, if these people are representatives of their constituents, why are they being paid by the federal government?
Right.
And not the state governments that they are supposedly representing.
Interesting.
Yeah. So in other words, the Anti-Federalists could see what was going on and knew what the consequences long term were going to be. Because once you're paid by the federal government, you've got a stake in maintaining the swamp and keeping it going.
Wow. Yes.
You know, it's just a very short little observation. I thought, whoa, that's a good one.
And 240 years later, it really.
And 240 years later, here we are.
If you were to look at the aftermath of all this and the figures that are emerging, I'm going to throw a few names by you, but Rand Paul, Josh Hawley, Tulsi Gabbard. Mm-hmm. There's something in the air here about these figures. They are coming in to the aftermath of all this, and they have a real voice suddenly.
Well, they have a real voice because they can see what's happening. You know, right. I go back to Ron Paul, you know, and the rise of the Tea Party. Taxed enough already, you know, people forget what the Tea Party, where the initials T come from, but it stands for taxed enough already. The Ron Paul phenomenon is something that intrigues me because what he was doing was he was, you know, for a decade prior to all of this, seeing exactly where this was going and saying we need to put a stop to it. And you can tell that they were nervous even then when Mittens Romney would not allow the Ron Paul people even to be have a voice.
Yes.
in the Republic Thug Convention back in 2008.
Yes.
Yeah, 2008.
And 12. That,
yeah, and 12. That is not going away. And I think what you're also going to see happen with some of these people, Tulsi Gabbard, you mentioned her, I think you're going to see some sort of, and I'm crawling way out on the twig here, I think you're going to see some sort of split in both political parties. I mean, the GOP is in tatters.
Oh, my God.
It's just, you know.
McConnell is leading an impeachment against Trump. It's insane.
Yeah.
After he's out of office? I mean, that.
Who's he married to?
He is, right. Yes. Yeah. He's a Chinese national.
Yeah. Yeah. So no surprise to me there.
Yeah.
The
He's a Kentucky Republican, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, I know.
It's supposed to be, well, those good old boys, they won't go after each other because, you know, he's a Southern Republican. He's not going to impeach his own president after he's out. But no.
No.
He's like, we're going to hear it, and I think it's valid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Ridiculous.
It's totally ridiculous. But, you know, this is the problem with the GOP. If those people think, number one, if they think they have a shot at winning another federal election, forget it. I mean, the bottom line, the lesson that so many people are taking away from this last election, why bother even voting when this is the result? And you can number me in that camp. You know, I came out of voting retirement. I went into voting retirement when Herbert Walker, King George I, ran in 1988. I said, no way. You know, if this is our choice.
Wow.
You know, Dukakis and Bush, no way. Thank you very much. And I did not vote until 2016 because Hillary was just too abominable even to think of. You know, I think many people felt that way.
You want to call my family back in the White House?
Well, yeah, no, I don't. You know, I was a student in college when he was elected governor.
Wow.
So I've heard every story there is. There was a committee at the University of Arkansas when Bill Clinton decided to run for governor. And it was an anonymous group of faculty at the university that called themselves the Arkansas Committee, and they started digging up stuff on him like you would not believe, and just putting it out samizdat style. You know? And so, you know, I've heard everything about the Clintons that there is to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And from a very early period, and I did not want her anywhere near the levers of power because she's by far much more dangerous than her husband.
Absolutely.
Just unbelievable. I can't even go into the details on the recording, Daniel. I'll tell you afterward. But
Yes.
I've heard, you know, a lot of stuff about them from people that were close to them.
Wow.
And there was just no way. And, you know, I came out of voting retirement. And so, you know, here we have this stolen election, and I'm thinking, you know, what good does this do? If right. this is the extent to which the corruption has so become endemic in this country since JFK was assassinated. That's what we're looking at. We're looking at the long-term consequences of a coup d'etat that occurred in 1963, and they pulled another one.
Wow.
And, you know, it would have been a little too suspicious to off Donald Trump in that dramatic a fashion, so we'll come up with something different because people aren't going to buy another magic bullet. So,
yeah. Oswald was a disgruntled loner.
Yeah, a disgruntled loner, you know, and a Marxist, and, you know.
Oh, yeah. That's a really interesting point, which is the foundation. This is, you know, and we comment a lot about Professor Scott's work. There's a book he did called The First Deep State Assault Against the White House. And it is the Kennedy assassination. But that's really what it comes down to, which is the Kennedy assassination, its impact, its reverberation, Johnson getting in, taking over, the Vietnam War, the drug running, and all this. This is what would not have been realized under the Kennedy presidency. Right. Kennedy was going for freedom. He was going for freedom in space. He was going for freedom, knowledge sharing on the UFO file.
Yep.
So this is, you know, that's large scale. Think of how advanced a thinker he was. I found some interesting comments from Mikhail Gorbachev speaking at the Texas School Book Depository.
Oh, wow.
And he said, when you really look at Kennedy's legacy, that he was so far ahead of its time that it obviously contributed to his assassination.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Oh, I totally agree.
Yeah.
You know, this is coming from Mikhail Gorbachev. And, you know, as well as I do, he knows a lot more than he's ever talked about.
Yes.
You know? Whatever you think of him as a person, I've in the times that I've watched him since the fall of the Soviet Union, he's very candid.
Yes.
He's very, very candid. Much more so than some of our leaders. Again, you know, it's odd that we turn now to RT and Sputnik for some of the news about what's going on in this country. Yeah. Our own media is not telling us. Yeah, things have changed a bit here, folks, from when you and I were kids, that's for sure. But Gorbachev is interesting because I'm convinced that the Soviets and the Russians knew a heck of a lot more about the Kennedy assassination than they've ever let on. And I go back to that period when Walter Cronkite was covering the assassination. And this is in a documentary called Evidence of Revision. If you ever get a hold of this documentary, watch it. It's good.
Yes.
Because here's Walter Cronkite in his glasses, and he's reading this statement of Victor Zorin. Okay. Now, he doesn't tell you when he's reading this that Victor Zorin was the Soviet ambassador to the United Nations Security Council that tangled with Adlai Stevenson during right. the Cuban Missile Crisis. It's that Victor Zorin that we're talking about.
Don't wait for the translation.
Yeah, we'll wait. Don't wait for the translation, Mr. Zorin. You know good and well what I'm saying. You know, go Adlai. But anyway. And we could get into Adlai Stevenson, too. Wow. But anyway, so Zorin, after he hears about the Kennedy assassination, releases a statement. And Cronkite's reading this, and he's saying, now remember, this is coming from a communist propaganda shill, Victor Zorin, blah, blah, blah. But Zorin, and then he proceeds to read what Zorin says. Zorin says that anyone who studied the security procedures for any world leader will know that President Kennedy's security, and he basically comes right out and says, was stripped
yes.
from him in order to yes. enable the assassination.
Wow.
You know,
incredible.
So it was patently obvious, you know, before the Warren Commission was even a gleam in Lyndon Johnson's eye, it was patently obvious to the Russians what went on.
Right, absolutely. It's interesting. There's that story that comes from Arthur Schlesinger that
yes.
RFK sent over an emissary saying that, no, we understand that there was no international involvement, that my brother was felled by a domestic conspiracy, a deep state conspiracy right there. It's fascinating, too, because when we look out, there were some strange things going on during the election. Powell, for one, yes. conjured up this connection to JFK.
Yes.
JFK assassination. Her first big prosecution of this drug lord, the person who the drug lord hired was one of those tramps, Charles Harrelson, or someone identified as being one of the tramps. So there was a direct link from Powell through this. And then also the Kennedy conjuring during the final Christmas at the White House, all of the ornaments, you know, the Kennedy portrait looking down, and then activating the NSAM 57, stripping the Pentagon powers to support the CIA. This is interesting to me. It's that strange picture I have in my mind that I've posted so many times, which is Trump on one side, Nixon on the other, and John Connally in the middle in the late 80s. And we know the symbolism of that. Again, that echo from this strange event.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I said some time ago on an interview with you that from the assassination of President Kennedy to the election of Donald Trump, that was one long arc of American history.
Yes.
That it was all tied together. And in this last selection, with certain counties tipping the vote for Biden under incredibly questionable circumstances, one of the things that stood out to me was the fact that there was a Philadelphia mafioso that was reported in the Philadelphia Inquirer as having been involved in some of that activity. So, in other words, all those old players were out in force again.
Wow. That is incredible.
Yeah.
And as soon as the election outcome was known and the inauguration happened, who died? Sheldon Adelson. Who was?
You got to wonder. Well, yeah. go back to something else I've mentioned. When President Obama had first taken office, there was that very strange state dinner that he had for the Indian prime minister. Remember that?
Yes.
And people actually got into the dinner that were not authorized to be there. They had managed to breach Obama's security. And then a few weeks later, somebody got within 6 or 7 feet of the First Lady, Michelle Obama, and again managed to breach security. So I'm thinking, did Obama get a message there?
Yeah.
That you'd better play ball? Because remember who was on his speech writing committee at the time? Ted Sorensen.
Oh, right.
Another JFK tie there.
Yeah.
So, huge tie there. So something, to me, it looks like something happened after President Obama took office to send him a message, you know, play ball.
Wow. Wow. Unbelievable. And it's interesting because Obama starts off with a speech saying, our CIA went into Iran and overthrew Mossadegh in 53 and we shouldn't have done that and all the rest. And then a year later, he's bombing Libya. So he's a totally different person. He's completely transformed.
Well, look, Daniel, we've already got stories out now that there are U.S. troop movements in Syria.
Yes.
From Iraq. And then after that story gets out, then they put out another story. Oh, no, these are just part of normal, routine troop movements. Well, they're normal routine troop movements that apparently Russia's responding to with some normal routine troop movements of its own.
No, the game's back on.
The game's back on. And I'm telling you, these people in power now, if they think they're going to start something with Russia and win it,
wow.
I don't put this politically correct transgendered military up against the Russians for 5 minutes.
Wow.
I really don't. You know, think again about before you throw those dice, folks. Ain't gonna work out too well for you.
Well, we know that Russia was the big prize that they were trying to get Hillary in there for, and they wanted the war with Russia. They wanted to, you know, encircle it. They wanted to make sure that it didn't do its own thing, its own SWIFT, and all those financial issues. And it shows a lot of independence, and not just financially and militarily, but agriculturally.
Oh, agriculturally, and in terms of making point by point criticisms of the global only agenda. I mean, listen to Vladimir Putin's speeches. I mean, he set them back in that 2007 speech that he did for the NATO Security Conference. You know, he just laid it all on the table. And, you know, encircling Russia is kind of a problem because it's kind of big. And the way I'm looking at it, again, Daniel, the geopolitical fallout from this, we have already seen the Japanese under Shinzo Abe. We've seen Japan starting to pull away, and this is only going to accelerate. And I pointed out in a recent blog, it was a few weeks ago now, of this logistics treaty for bilateral logistical support of each other's military between Japan and India. Okay, how are they going to balance the accounts and the clearing between those two countries? Are they going for any eventuality where they would have to do that? You know, China decides all of a sudden to invade Japan and India gives logistical support to the Japanese. Well, how are they going to financially reconcile those accounts? My bet is they're going to bypass the dollar. My bet. You know, the treaty doesn't say, but that's my bet. So, again, we're going to see some huge geopolitical fallout. They were so desperate, Mr. Globaloney was so desperate to get rid of Trump that they may have hoisted themselves on their own petard.
Unbelievable. This is incredible stuff, by the way.
Well, yeah. These may you live in interesting times, you know, that's the old Chinese curse.
So we've taken a pretty deep look at some of the more bizarre things that came out of this deep event of the election. Let's look at some real outside the ballpark explanations. Okay. You were talking about the rush, the fast moving action of all this, and the reasons why that could be happening are such a mystery. And let's look at one of them, which is we've seen a lot of reports about fireballs, asteroids, and all of these types of things. And we know that there's been a certain amount of hype around this as well. So we've got maybe legitimate activity and then hyped activity, but it certainly has been elevated no matter what side of the coin that you're looking at. Do you think it's possible that they are aware of an incoming disaster, comet strike type situation and are assembling the population the way that they want them so that they can ultimately that the leadership can survive in splendor and that these people are all basically just out of the, you know, they're left there in the cold?
I think it's possible. I think if you look at this, what's going on culturally in terms of the selection and the narrative that you cannot challenge the election as being legitimate. Okay.
Right.
I think what, to a certain extent, what they're doing is they're trying to condition people to accept more and more egregious and outrageous narratives. which would certainly fit the bill if they are planning either to stage a major space-related event or that they might be aware that one is coming, whatever shape, form, or fashion it may take. Asteroids, comets, ET invasions, what have you.
Right.
I think they are prepping the ground for that. I think they are also trying to close down. I mean, we saw this with FASB 56. They're trying to close down any detailed inquiry into where, in the name of sense, is all of this money going.
Right.
Because, you know, you and I and Catherine Fitz and Richard Dolan and many others have been saying for years that there's too much money sloshing around and we're not seeing any of it publicly. I mean, I live literally a mile from the interstate where I live here, and the part of the interstate that I live near has not been updated since it was built in 1965.
Wow.
Okay? That's how bad it is. So where's all this money going?
Yes.
And I think if you look at it from the long-term point of view, we're not only talking about missing trillions of dollars in the last couple of years. We're talking about missing trillions of dollars over several decades.
Wow.
And that will build out quite an infrastructure. That will build out an endowment, like Catherine says, for a world government. And let's remember something in this regard in connection to space, in connection to false flags and everything else. Do you remember, and I've mentioned this many times before, do you remember that before 9/11, a Russian economist by the name of Dr. Tatiana Koryagina wrote an op-ed piece in, I think it was Pravda, or it appeared maybe in Izvestia or something like that, one of the old Soviet agencies that was rolled over into the Russian media today. She wrote this op-ed piece in, I think it was July of 2001, in which she said that the United States would shortly be attacked on its own soil by a cabal, with resources in excess of $300 trillion.
Wow.
Now, $300 trillion is a lot of money. And my question is, you don't need $300 trillion to pull off 9/11.
Yes.
So what's that money going to? Where is it going? And my response has always been, there's so much money sloshing around in the system, plus the creation of President Truman in 1947 of the national security state, and then taking the top secret decision to recover all of that Japanese gold and turn it over to the National Security Council as a slush fund for political operations and covert operations. Well, Daniel, that amount of money vastly exceeds any expenditures that you would need to sustain covert operations.
Right.
So where is it gone? And my answer is space.
Yes.
There's no other explanation for this. Another reason that Mr. Musk is moving his operation to Texas. What's Texas associated with?
Yes.
And there you go. So I think something's going on here. And even that NASDAQ data center move to Texas might have something to do with space.
Interesting. Yeah.
They want to commercialize space.
Right.
They want to conduct commerce out there. They want to build, you know, Germany wants to build a 4G network on the moon. What for? You know, who are you going to call?
Right.
Why do you need that? Well, you need it if you're planning on doing any sort of financial clearing that's multi-planetary.
Right.
So now the question is, who are we trading with?
Yes. That gets us in a deeper answer. It's funny because, you know, they just found some new papers about Tesla talking about his communications with these radio signals. And he was saying it was unmistakable that it was Mars that was sending the radio signals that were definitely intelligently controlled. And then Marconi went in and said the same thing. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting that they're on record there at that time doing that. And they thought, well, this is going to be a great expanse of, you know, communications and all the rest. They didn't know in that period that there wasn't human life on those planets. But obviously somebody had the technology there on Mars at the turn of the 19th into the 20th century where they were sending these signals directly. And Tesla actually described the feeling as almost unnerving, taking in this and seeing it, because he thought he was the only person who was communicating with these aliens.
Well, it goes much further. Back during the Mars opposition in the 1920s, this is something you really have to dig for. There was an experiment to try and pick up some of these signals. And they had this kind of paper tape machine, like a stock ticker at the time that would, you know, spit out stuff. They had some sort of machine like this, apparently, from what I've read, that was trying to pick up these signals and put it on these paper tapes, ticker tapes. And oddly enough, some of the designs, and I use that word advisedly, some of the designs that were coming across in this tape were just baffling to them because it was some sort of clear sign of intelligence. And, you know, the U.S. Navy just came down like that and said, you know, we're not talking about this much anymore. So, yeah, it's out there. You really have to dig for it. But they did, you know, they took Tesla very seriously and tried to corroborate it and, you know, found something that shouldn't have been there. it's like that something in Antarctica that they just recently found. So,
yeah, what was that all about?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Yeah. But what I'm not buying is that it's a glacial formation.
Okay.
A rare glacial formation is the way the scientists sent to explain it all. As you know, cue the scientists, you know. Explanation. It's a trick of light and shadow, guys.
Oh, yes.
Know that moon of Saturn does not look like George Lucas's Death Star. You know, on and on we could go.
During the whole kind of aftermath of the election, suddenly monoliths everywhere. Mm-hmm. Now, we know that one of the moons. Is it Phobos that has the obelisk on it that they photographed? And Buzz Aldrin has commented on it and thought, you know, he's somebody who almost has an erratic state when he talks about space because he'll say something, let it out, and then he has to take it back. But he did spit that out there.
Yeah, he did.
He would be somebody in the know on that. The obelisk, of course, from 2001 means a great deal. Uh-huh. And they got it from somewhere, of course, especially with the writer having all those very, very deep connections himself. What was this? What did you make of the obelisk's appearance everywhere and that the media loved to talk about this?
Well, I think they're prepping the narrative. In other words, they are slowly shifting the narrative from the trick of light and shadow nonsense to, oh, look at this.
Right.
Oh, look at that. And again, you couple that with this domestic terrorism bill, they're prepping a narrative. And they want to get everybody conditioned to accept whatever narrative they put out. And I find that very, very disturbing, especially regarding space.
Yes.
Because let's assume the people in power now want to put out the narrative that, oh, we're in contact with ET and they're our friends. Now, we're dealing essentially with godless people, number one, who will tell us anything about who our friends are. Well, number one, the communist Chinese aren't our friends.
Okay.
You know. That's problem number one. Problem number two is, to me, the record of ancient texts is very clear that whoever is out there may not necessarily be all that friendly. Yeah. Okay, you know, in other words, I'm not buying the Jonquils and Daisies approach to extraterrestrial contact. You know, if they do come back and start pretending to be our friends, and all of a sudden your neighbors are disappearing and not ever being seen again, you know, maybe they're lunch, you know, to serve mankind in the Twilight Zone scenario. You know, this is the problem.
COVID centers or prepping centers. After
well,
all.
Look. Oh, boy. There's something about this whole COVID thing that bothers me.
Yeah.
Particularly with this rush to get everybody vaccinated and tested. I go back to what I opined with the Secret Space Program conference in Texas. All of a sudden, everybody's in this mad rush to get their DNA tested and find out who their ancestors are and blah, blah, blah. I think they're looking for somebody. I really do. They're looking for somebody with a genetic signature that may not necessarily be Homo sapiens sapiens.
Fascinating.
Yeah, they look like us, they walk like us, they talk like us, and they may have a few chromosomes difference. You know, there's what? 1% of our chromosomes separate us from chimpanzees.
Right.
So, you know, those ancient records are fairly clear. That somebody who looked like us, walked like us, and talked like us interacted with us at one point, you know, way long ago. So nothing would surprise me.
Do you think that they're having luck tracking this set of beings down?
That's a wholly different question. But I suspect that by now, given the amount of data that they've been able to assemble. And there's another aspect of this I want to get into after I mention this, that given the amount of data that they've managed to assemble, Daniel, I wouldn't be surprised that they've had some success.
Interesting.
The other thing that intrigues me about this domestic terrorism bill is that it might be cover for that. In other words, if you have a segment of the population that isn't us but looks like us, you could easily go after them under that cover. And I say that because another aspect of that sort of operation would be to identify behavior patterns that are regular and recurrent within a certain segment of the population, but that are not necessarily completely human in nature. In other words, they will have different social norms and so on. And I have to wonder, you know, if all of this mask wearing nonsense might somehow be tied with that. I don't know. But, you know, since we're speculating wildly, I do think that they've been trying to track these people, not just genetically, but in terms of behavior. And who knows, you know, let's go back to some other old Twilight Zone scenarios. The scenarios of maybe our governments are being infiltrated already.
Yes. Yes.
Because you look at the behavior of these people on the world stage, they're Looney Tunes.
Yes.
They're not acting like humans, and they're acting in an anti-human fashion. So you have to wonder, maybe, you know, maybe there's an infiltration operation, all of the Charlie Sheen movie, The Arrival, that's going on here. Who knows?
Right, absolutely. Well, people like Klaus Schwab, Herr Schwab.
Yeah, go on, Daniel. I'm listening.
When he talks, I do. He makes. I think of you immediately. I'm like, I want to talk to you about this. He's you know, he's advocating out there so broadly, like the reset, and we know that when they call the Great Reset, that's actually a very dangerous phrase when you think about it, because it makes you think, oh, something better is coming with it, instead of, you know, the fascist reset, mm-hmm. or the consolidation of humanity reset, you know, which is what we should really call these types of things. But there's no doubt that in those papers of the Fourth Industrial Revolution and the things that they push at the World Economic Forum, they are talking about by 2030, no private property. This is part of that too. And it's part of that fast thing too. Oh, you have, you know, thousands of years of civilization where people own things, and then suddenly you're going to shut it off in 10.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's not just shutting that off. It's the inhumanity of what they're proposing in connection with it. This is what I find the most disturbing of it all. They are in this mad transhumanist rush to completely change the nature of humanity. And, you know, good luck with that. But Schwab is so inhuman.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not a normal guy. I mean, I call him Ernst Stavro Blofeld, and, you know, the World Economic Forum is nothing but Spectre, you know, because you can just see him, you know, with his little pinky finger and his white cat, you know. He's just totally over the top, and I'm looking at this guy and I'm thinking, is this guy really human?
Yeah.
You know, and you could say that about a lot of other of these so-called leaders. There's something inhuman about them. So I have to wonder.
The transhumanist movement, it's one thing to have people obsessed with technology, but to the level where they want to replace humanity, where they want to merge with machines, we know there's a whole esoteric element to this about the levels in the tree of life. Mm-hmm. And that they want to now convert into the mineral aspect of that. And it's this climbing up some other way to spiritual enlightenment without going through the traditional evolutionary steps. They think that they've figured out this method, and the mineral aspect is a big piece of this, merging in with those stone, the metal of the machine. When we look at it that way, how do they regard humanity? Humanity is on some level their enemy, because they have seen themselves as a different form of life altogether.
Yes. Yeah. It's so bad now, Daniel. I just, before we got started with recording, I got an email from somebody about scientists now beginning to talk about vaccinating dogs and cats.
Yes.
For COVID.
Yes.
In other words, all life is on their plate. All life is their target. And it's interesting to me that they pick the two most popular domesticated animals that, you know, give something to our humanity as their first target.
True.
So, yeah, I have to wonder, are these people really, really human, or are they already part of the machine that they want everybody else to become?
Right.
You know, this is a wholesale assault on humanity itself that they're really all about. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's coming straight out of the pit of hell. So I can't see these people concocting any other civilization than a hellish one. You know, Schwab to me, when I say Dr. Ernst Stavro Blofeld, Inspector, I mean it. You know, it's partly funny, but that's what they are acting like.
Right.
And this current crop in the lying circus in Swampington, D.C., they're right on board with them. Mm-hmm. You know, if I were Joe Biden's bishop, bang, instant excommunication. Don't even bother showing up for mass. Instant. What bothers me is, why hasn't that happened?
Excellent question. Just fascinating information, Joseph. Stay right there. We're going to hold you over for another hour for subscribers to Dark Journalist who will get it in their inbox this weekend. Of course, there's more on space and Earth changes that we need to get into. Joseph's work is available at GizaDeathStar.com, and of course, sign up at DarkJournalist.com to stay updated on the latest shows that we have coming up for you. And we'll see you next Friday with the X-Series. See you soon.